had in mind that I would continue canto one. Does it matter? Canto one, canto four. It'll be difficult chanting the verse, except it's a well-known verse. Dharmasya yagavargasya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Kasya. For one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service.
Translation of Dhamma is for dharma.
we discussed yesterday evening occupational duties. What was the message that we read yesterday evening about occupational duties? What was the Bible conversation? Do you remember? Yes, focused on the Lord, but specifically the purpose of occupational duties is, if done properly, to provoke an attraction, awaken an attraction for the message of Godhead. We should do our occupational duties in such a way that that happens, and if you don't do it, and that where that happens, messages, we're wasting our time and misusing our time. We're not directing our occupational duties in the proper way. So then we have to realign how we're doing our occupational duty. And our occupational duty, by explaining the purport, it will come to that stage where attraction for the messages of Godhead come about as a result of our occupation, like go to work and have an awakening desire to read Bhagavad Gita. Well, that would be fun. Let me go to work so I'll have a stronger desire to read Bhagavad Gita. And besides go to work, our occupational duty may be housewife. Let me do my duties as a housewife, so I'll be very inspired to go to Mangalarati tomorrow morning. And that's hearing the seeing the deity form and glorifying the spiritual master and Krishna's holy name. Is that what's coming as a result of our occupational duty? It won't be like that if we have a misconception of what our occupational duty is meant for. So that's what this verse is discussing. There are these two words, kavarga and apavarga. Kavarga, well, it means suffering. And apavarga means ultimate liberation from all suffering. So, dharma should be performed for that purpose. Dharma should be performed so that we can go back to Godhead. Apavarga. There's this word apavarga in a general way is translated as liberation. The Prabhupada has been very specific. Ultimate liberation. One idea of liberation is merging. The Bhagavad teaching is not merging. Going beyond merging, going into the spiritual, beyond the spiritual sky, into the spiritual planets, and associating directly with Krishna. My dear devotees, we're getting a very high teaching here. Fasten your seatbelt. The takeoff is very powerful. Ultimate liberation. Dharmasya, P-H-I in Sanskrit means certainly, it's for emphasis. Ultimate occupational duties are certainly meant for one thing only. Ultimate liberation, going back to Godhead. Then it says, but it's not. Dharmasya hi apavargasya, na narthasya. Nartho kayopakalpate. It should never be considered as the motivation should never be considered to increase material prosperity or material gain. Now we'll speak about this word artha. We've all heard dharma, artha, kama, moksha, right? We've all heard that. When people speak about dharma, artha, kama, moksha, how do they mean it? They mean it in a different way. Perform your religious duties so that you'll get artha. What does artha mean in that sense? Money, 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 money. Well, economic development, prosperity. Religion is so that you will prosper. And what's the purpose of prosperity? Anybody knows. Kama. Sense that you use wealth and prosperity to enjoy your senses. Dharma leads to artha, leads to kama. Dharma is for the purpose of sense gratification. With a nice sandwich of artha in between. And after a lifetime of living prosperously, then you can think about liberation. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Now a literal definition of the word artha is not economic development or wealth. The literal definition is artha means that which is desired. Just like we have this common term anartha. There's artha and there's anartha. But the A prefix in front of it becomes it's negative, not wanted. So artha means something wanted, something desired. An attainment that someone wants. What is that attainment that people want? Money, money, money. Economic development. The candidates running for office in any country of the world, they promise prosperity. I'll build the economy. There's a very interesting educational website called storyofstuff.com where it explains, you know, where does stuff come from? Where does it go to? Where's production and resource and what's it doing to the earth? And how are we living our lives in this world? And so one of the points they make is when 9/11 happened, what did the President Bush say to the people? You should pray to God, or let us feel grief, or something. What he said is, go out and shop, purchase, keep buying things. He was concerned that the economy might sag because of the shock of this whole event. So go out and enjoy life. Do shopping, because the economic prosperity of this country is our religion. I mean, he didn't say it explicitly like that, but that's what he was saying. Because in times of great danger, one turns to God, and God is economic development. Prosperity. Enjoying your senses. And that ethic has consumed even, Prabhupada explained it this way, that before the Europeans came to America, there were Red Indians living in America, Native Indians. And the Europeans came for the purpose of religious freedom. They were feeling oppressed by the religious and governmental structures of Europe. And so they fled. Pilgrims came for religious freedom and they established churches and they prayed to God for prosperity. Dharma led to artha. And once they had their prosperity and their sense gratification, the churches became empty. And then the Hare Krishna movement came and purchased many churches and filled up the churches and synagogues, the Brooklyn temples, the former synagogues, and the Toronto temple and the Montreal temple and the LA temple and Dallas temple, and so many temples were being used as churches that became empty because people had their artha and kama, so who needs dharma anymore? Because the purpose of dharma is not economic prosperity. So the verse nartasya, na artha. Dharma should not be performed for economic prosperity. What happened? Dharma artha kama moksha. Thus the definition of artha changes. The definition of artha, that which is desired, is ultimate liberation. That's what dharma should be performed for, the purpose of ultimate liberation, not for sense gratification. Nartha artayoka kalpate, upakalpate. It's never meant, upakalpate is meant for. It's never meant for, dharma is not meant for sense gratification and prosperity. Some years ago I visited Puerto Rico, and those of you that may have visited Puerto Rico and have taken the ride from the airport to the temple saw the same thing that I saw. On this kind of rural road, there was this huge, probably now it's, I'm sure it's now completed, tall building going up, construction. Right next to, practically like you could put a piece of paper in between the two buildings, that and a big church. And I asked the driver, what's that? He said, oh, that's a very controversial priest. Yeah, but what's the building? He said, this priest is very popular because he teaches, enjoy, pray to God, be religious, and prosper, and enjoy. And his church is filled. People like that message. And of course, part of your worship of God is to give something in the money box. You take something. You give donation to the church. And he was so popular, he decided that he would make a big skyscraper building off of this rural road right next to the church where people could live and go to the church every day and offer their prayers and hear the same sermon. Prosper and enjoy. So they could buy a place next door. And go and pray and go out to work and prosper. The rest of the religious, the Christian denominations are really against this guy because he's, they know that's not the ultimate message, but he's taking away their congregations because people want that. He's pandering to their material sensibilities. Well, the Bhagavatam, don't do that. Hear ye, don't do your religious duties for sense gratification and material prosperity. That should not be the purpose. It's not meant for that. It's meant for going back to Godhead. Apavarta, ultimate liberation. Then the second half is Nartasya Dharmaikantasya. Supposing that's not your motivation, or at least not overtly, just kind of, you do your religious duty, and you're going along in life, and look at this, here comes this wave of prosperity. I didn't do my dharma so that it would come, but here it comes. Krishna must want me to enjoy. Second half says, no!
And if that prosperity comes of its own accord, never use it in sense gratification. So it's like this end and this end. Don't, as a motivator, be motivated to do religious activities so that you will prosper, so that you will enjoy. And on this end, supposing you got that message and you're doing your duty, you're being a nice devotee, and you're going to Mangal Arati and you're chanting and you're reading and you're happy in Krishna consciousness, and this wave of prosperity comes into your life. Generally it doesn't, but supposing this wave comes, oh, look at all the sense gratification. No! But wait a minute, I didn't even ask for it. That's all right. No! It should never be deployed in sense gratification. Well, what should it be used for? Used for the service of Krishna. That's how it should be used. Because through the service of Krishna, this ultimate liberation will be yours. And you fall prey to this mistake. When prosperity does come, use it for sense gratification. You just got caught by the trap of Maya. So the Bhagavan wants to protect us from that allure, the attraction. On this end or on this end. Supposing what is according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there are four types of anarthas. We all know what anarthas is, right? We talk about artha and then anartha. Artha is something desired, anartha is something unwanted. The anartha is in the heart. So one of those, the categories of anarthas in Madhurya Kundalini, they're compared to clouds in the sky that block the sun. And so simply there's anarthas in the heart that block our direct experience of Krishna. And anarthas are analyzed according to their source. Where do those impurities of heart, unwanted things in the heart come from? Would you like to hear what those four categories are?
Yes.
First, very easy to understand. The anartha that arises in the heart due to one's past sins. Anarthas arise in the heart. And that anartha of past sins can be eradicated by chanting of the holy names of the Lord. So, second one is anarthas that arise in the heart due to past pious activities. That's a little more difficult to understand. But not really. Because due to past pious activities, what happens? One gets a good result. The good result, if I get some nice facility in this material world and my heart's not pure, I'll try to be the enjoyer of that nice facility. And that's an anartha. It's an unwanted condition of heart. So it's not that we shouldn't perform virtuous activities, but we need to have pure hearts, because otherwise we'll try to be the enjoyers of those results of virtuous activities. That's just another kind of anartha. So chanting of the holy name purifies the heart of that spirit of enjoyment, plus the Bhagavatam is directing us to do so. So that the fruits of our past pious activity become used in service to Krishna instead of sense gratification. Okay, two down and two to go. The next one is offense. Due to offenses, anarthas or impurities or contaminations arise within the heart. The Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that there's divisions of offenses. So watch out. One of the offenses is offenses in devotional service, in seva, seva-paras.
like rendering service to the deity when one makes an offense and serving the deity. Again, says, this is counteracted by the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Good companion, right? Chanting of the holy names of the Lord. But it's not that you can go on making offenses to the deity, thinking it's okay because I chant the holy name of the Lord. Because then that becomes namaparad. You try to avoid making mistakes or offenses in your seva, your devotional service, combined with the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. You frees one from that. But then from that anartha that arises in the heart. But in that same category as namaparad. So you can't, if you make offenses against the holy name, the effect of the chanting of the holy name becomes reduced. The cleansing effect. So therefore, we receive this instruction. There's 10 offenses. Avoid the 10 offenses while chanting the holy name, or in conjunction with the light that's involved in chanting of the holy name. And then one can become relieved of all of those three categories of anarthas. But now we have one more. Number four is anarthas that arise due to a little success in spiritual life. That's over on this end now. There's this end and there's this end. So the other end is you're a little successful in spiritual life. And here comes some prosperity. Here comes some title, some fame, some recognition, some position. And if one tries to think, I didn't start devotional service for this reason, but here it comes, here comes some praise, here comes some title, here comes some position, here comes some recognition. Ooh, this is good. That's an anartha that blocks Krishna. We can't see Krishna. We can't experience our loving relationship with Krishna. Because we didn't hear this ninth verse of the second chapter of Canto 1 properly. We were thinking, I want to enjoy, that's my reason. I want some relief, that's why. I want prosperity. And we'll not experience Krishna. Supposing we don't start like that, we just want to connect with Krishna. We're trying to connect with Krishna. We're going along and here comes all this stuff. So being the enjoyer of spiritual success is another anartha. What's an honest guy to do? It's like, the answer is to just hear the message of the Bhagavatam. The purpose of devotional service is to please Krishna. And that's what ultimate liberation is. That's the Bhagavatam's message. So now we'll go back to the introductory verses of this first canto, where it says, dharma prajita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsanam satam. Satam means devotees. It means those who are attached to Sat, the eternal, to Krishna. Krishna's own Tat Sat, the Supreme Absolute Truth, in person. So those that are devotees, for those that are devotees, they like this message that devotional service in its unalloyed form is really what you should be attracted to and cultivated. Not, I want to enjoy, therefore let me do this religious activity so that I can enjoy it. It's common, very common, The people will go to the place of worship, church, mosque, synagogue, place of worship, temple, because this is what virtuous people do. This is what good people do. Their sense of a loving relationship and service to Krishna isn't how they're thinking. So we want to train them and ourselves in the ways of devotional service. What service can we do for Krishna? Krishna is not our servant. He's not our footmat. We come with our dirty feet and wipe our feet all over the footmat and think, oh, that was very nice. Now that our feet are clean. Krishna is not for making our dirty selves clean. He'll do that. But Krishna is the object of our service. And our occupations are varieties of services. Pleasing Krishna is the purpose of our occupational work. We should live our lives, do our work, do our occupation, whether it's in home or in the office or the workplace. We should conduct our lives for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. Not for material gain, not for economic prosperity. And if we're, even if we're on this higher level, something may come. Never use it for sense gratification. Never use it for your own personal purposes. Only and always for Krishna. This is pure devotional service. It's very satisfying. It's rarely heard or to speak of a pain, but that's the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll read Prabhupada's short purport and see if we have some discussion. We have already discussed that pure devotional service to the Lord is automatically followed by perfect knowledge and detachment from material existence. But there are others who consider that all kinds of different occupational engagements, including those of religion, are meant for material gain. The general tendency of any ordinary man in any part of the world is to gain some material profit in exchange for religious or any other occupational service. Even in Vedic literatures, for all sorts of religious performances, an allurement of material gain is offered. And most people are attracted by such allurements or blessings of religiosity. Why are such so-called men of religion allured by material gain? Answer? Because material gain can enable one to fulfill desires, which in turn satisfy sense gratification. This cycle of occupational engagements includes so-called religiosity followed by material gain, and material gain followed by fulfillment of desires. Sense gratification is the general way for all sorts of fully occupied men. But, in the statement of Sutta Goswami, as per the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam, this is nullified by the present shloka. And the last paragraph is two sentences. Conclusion. Oh, but often we think, therefore, it is to be concluded that, this is like the summary, one should not engage himself in any sort of occupational service for material gain only. Don't go to work for material gain only. Don't do your duties in the home or in the society for material profit only. It's not the purpose. That's bondage. But as a service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He's given each of us some ability, some inclination, some talent, some intelligence, some skill. He's given us these endowments or gifts. Those are to be used in service to the Supreme. And then, second sentence, final sentence of the purport. Nor should material gain be utilized for sense gratification. How material gain should be utilized is described as follows. The next verse tells us how to use material gain to serve Krishna. So this is not a matter of this ism, that ism, another ism. It's a platform of purity for all religious teaching, all different denominations of religious expression. So that's the Bhagavatam. It's just teaching us essences or principles. Some middle-aged American woman named Rose, she was attending Bhagavad Gita study group. Very pious person. So I asked her, how do you like the Bhagavad Gita discussion group? I really like it. I said, what do you like best about it? She said, well, it isn't teaching a particular ism, it's teaching principles. And I can relate to that because she didn't elaborate. I know the person. She's been involved in this, that thing, and the other thing, and the other thing. And always find some compromise. So it's not teaching you to be part of this thing or be part of that thing. It's teaching you, here's principles to lead your life by. And that's Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not a certain set of rituals. We have our rituals. We have our deity worship and arati and yajnas. We have our rituals. You know, our japa ritual. It's from an outsider's perspective, these are rituals. We have our rituals. We have a little bead bag and have our neck beads. When people see somebody walking down the street with a bead bag and neck beads, they say, oh, there's Hare Krishna. It's an external something. But the ritual is not the essence. The essence is the essence. And the essence is, do each of the, use your, chant on your beads and wear devotional clothes or put on tilak or whatever the things that fall into the category of rituals. For the purpose, not for material prosperity or economic development and sense gratification. That I do these things and I'll get some piety will come to me. And with my piety, then I'll prosper. Very common conception. Maybe not so overt like this thing in Puerto Rico, but it's a common conception. I'll end with this last thing. I've made an experiment in about five different times in the course of my life as a traveling sannyasi with different audiences to find out, like sampling some highly educated people, a large group of Indian people, some American people, some people in India, some people in the West. Even before I finished the question, they got the statement, they got their hand up saying yes. So the question is, would you agree with the following statement as a fair and accurate statement of the purpose of religion? Listen carefully. The purpose of religion is to allow us in this life to live virtuously, live according to morality and ethics. Religion is to teach us to do that so that in this life we can enjoy in goodness, have a happy, good life, And after this life, go to a heavenly destination. How many of you would agree that that's an accurate statement of the purpose of religion? They all say yes. I mean, if anybody says anything other than that, is there anybody that has a different opinion? It's somebody that's read Prabhupada's books. It's not one nation, one culture, one group of people. It's universal. If they have an idea of religion, that's the idea. And Krishna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he uses the phrase Veda, Vada, Rata, so-called followers of the Vedas. Krishna says, think that the purpose of the Vedas is material elevation and there's nothing more than that. Second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Then Krishna says there is something more than that. But most people don't know. And even you tell them, they can't hear it. Because they're thinking prosperity. That's what I want. That's what it's for. What's this other thing? Very strong. Boat of passion has got a tight grip on people. Fruitive gain. And you then the tendency is to bring that fruitive gain of into devotional service. And the Bhagavatam is saying, no, don't bring that into devotional service. For ultimate liberation. And supposing stuff comes, fruits of being a nice devotee and doing, leading your life properly, prosperity comes. Don't fall prey to the sense of using that for sense gratification. Use it for the next verse. Use it for Christian service. Stay pure and go back to Godhead without developing attachments to the temporary place. Use the facilities here for service to Krishna. And the means for achieving that is our hearing and chanting process. Cleanse the heart, chant the dhamma in the heart. Okay. Any comments? Questions?
Yeah. Yeah. Hi, John. When you were talking about suffering, I was just wondering if suffering is necessary for the living and to become aware.
To become aware?
Yes, to become aware that we have to live in such a way that we can go back to
Well, the answer is, in the absolute sense, the answer is no. In the sense where the living entity is covered, it's yes. I mean, it's Krishna's design for that purpose. But is it necessary? And the answer is no. It's not absolutely necessary. We find in Nectar of Instruction there are four classes of intelligence. The first, topmost class of intelligence is one can understand just from hearing. Most people don't have that capacity, just from hearing. So the second is if they see combined with hearing, then they can understand. Third class is they see someone is suffering. They experience it themselves, then they can understand. And the fourth class is they still experience and they still can't understand. They heard, they saw, they experienced, they still don't understand. So, is there such a thing as first class intelligence? Yes. First class intelligence, suffering isn't necessary. Most people don't have first class intelligence. It's not necessary. And again, that's a nice question for those that do experience suffering. It's what's the purpose behind it? Because Many people look at the suffering and say, God is cruel. What have I done to deserve this kind of thing? There's so many bad people. And I'm a good person, just trying to be good, and here comes the suffering. Some family member, something happened. Why is God doing this? He's being unkind. But God's supposed to be kind, and I'm good. So there's complaint. Put something in the complaint box. Why is God doing this? So without understanding the purpose. So there is a purpose, but that purpose can be fulfilled in other ways. It depends. Your question, what's the position of such a person? It depends on, so the person is, they have an occupation, some portion is maintaining themselves and their family. Are they seeing maintaining themselves and their family in terms of service to Krishna? Or are they seeing that in terms of myself? Like, so much for Krishna, so much for me, so much for Krishna, so much for me. Me, so much for Krishna. For a devotee, all they see is devotional service. So the spirit isn't enjoyment. The spirit is service. Maintaining this body is service. I don't overdo it, and I don't underdo it. It's just what's necessary so my body is fit to serve Krishna and family. It's my service. It's part of my service. I shouldn't neglect my duty, my service. I should do it in the mood of service. Go ahead.
Some people in this early state of time, which is a part, they actually so divorced from their speech.
Their actions are divorced from their speech.
It's
say one thing, do another thing. Okay.
And what comes to mind is the scripture says that just means. Just believe me, so just believe. And what can we do to change that?
What can we do to which?
To change that.
Just believe in God and do whatever you want to do.
Just believe that.
Well, you can, the best thing is to show by example what's better, but as far as explaining, you know, what's the complete sense. Again, the Krishna consciousness is a science, it's not just a belief. Beliefs can change. It's, you know, someone's belief is that maybe all I have to do is believe. I can do what I want. But that's cheating. That's cheating themselves. According to your convictions, you act. And you have conviction and you do something else, then you don't have conviction. You're a cheater. You say, I have this conviction. So, you can help them understand the science of bhakti. Convictions of heart are the emanating source of our actions and our speech. So there should be consistency with the heart.
Yeah. Maharaj, I was always a little perplexed about dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. I never really make the transition from one stage to the next as you did it with dharma, artha, karma. But the other one I'm thinking, of course we all preach, we've heard so many times, we made a distinction between Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literature that Srila Vyasadeva compiled vast amount of Vedic literature with the idea of dharma, artha, karma and moksha. But I always kind of wonder how moksha will take place. What kind of level of intelligence or how it will happen. I never really, you know, understand that part.
The evolving to the stage of moksha is a many, many, many lifetimes program. The whole of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha spans over many lifetimes. And the idea is, as one's performance of dharma, religious activity, religious duty, becomes so solidified, they're like so core and essential to a person's being, that they begin thinking, there's several things, but they begin thinking, As I'm preparing myself for well-being after this life, what is it that's going beyond this life? It's the soul. Not this body goes on to the next life. The soul goes on to the next life. So, through association with scripture, association with brahmanas, association with religious duties, thought goes to the eternal. What am I doing for the eternal well-being of the soul? When one begins thinking like that, the eternal well-being of the soul, that moves into this realm of divorce from the body or distinct from the body, the well-being of the soul. Not yet having a devotional conception of God or personal conception of God, but just the well-being. It's me, 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 and me. So the well-being dharma, in order to get artha, to get kama, and lifetimes and lifetimes through association with Brahmins and the scriptures and the way of uplifting life, virtue and piety. So now the mode of goodness has become stronger, not just the passion I want to enjoy part, but the mode of goodness has become so much stronger that one then considers, what is it that's going on to the next situation? It's the soul. What am I doing for the soul? And through my contact with the scriptures, I'm hearing more about the soul, not just prosperity and enjoyment. Through the contact with the scriptures, it takes one to that next level. Gradually. And there are some persons, I've met many of those persons, they just accept it. That the pursuit of liberation comes at the end of this life. This life duty is, I get my education, I get a job, I get married, have my family, lead a religious life along the way, prosper, and then the last stage of life is when I do my, you know, detaching from all of that and strive for liberation. They see like that. There's some people that see like that in Vedic culture, or that have some impact. Vedic culture has an impact on their life. And it's for that reason that such persons, when they see their children become very involved in Krishna consciousness, they think, oh my God. They're going right away to moksha. They're going to become sannyasis and go for moksha. And they're not going to do the artha kama program. So their message is, be religious in a moderate degree, that's good, but don't become a fanatic. They say that, and you know, are you going to, you know, leave us and take sannyas, become a sannyasi? That's what they're thinking.
I guess they have some ideas.
Yeah, that comes later. You can do that later. Later. Now do this. And they think that's the, you know, they're giving good advice. Because you need to go through this to get to that. That's how Daksha spoke with Narada. Daksha's cursing of Narada was that you've deprived my sons of that stage of life where they can genuinely come to liberation, to reduce the detachment, after they've experienced the harshness and bitterness of family life. By leading a religious family life, they'll continue on the path for liberation. But you've cheated them. You haven't given them the opportunity to properly suffer through the tribulations of material life, religiously conducted, to truly come to the position of liberation where they have no regret. Because they've learned their lessons by religious life. That's another. At the end of this life comes liberation through gradual purification.
In that sense, Maharaj, we can count how fortunate we are to come in contact with Srila Prabhupada.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The teachings and the practice that right away puts us on the path of back to Godhead. Without qualification, being dodos, you know, being uneducated, uncultured, a little bit, you know, some sense of piety, but not anything really deep like Vedic culture is. And just set us on the path. If you remain faithful on that path, faithful and submissive and diligent, you'll start to get some of these realizations of messages that are being spoken here. Anything else?
No.
Yes?
Well, it was said that Krishna ensured that he tests us.
Krishna ensured that he?
Tests us.
Tests us? He tests us, that's the word?
Yes, sir. What are some of the forms that this test can come?
Prabhupada expressed, it's two or three, the two that are very clear. So we approach Krishna and say, my dear Lord Krishna, please accept me as your devotee. And then Krishna will test us by saying, are you sure you want to be a devotee? What about some enjoyment? Okay. That's one test. And on the other side, what about some austerity? Some hardship? Sure you want to be a devotee? And then, alternatively, thirdly, other kinds of isms, you know, like impersonalism. Sure you want me? And so when we demonstrate, that's what we want. How determined are we? Like, when Narada met with Dhruva, he tested Dhruva in these same ways. He's just a small boy, this way of life of reaching Vishnu, living in the forest. Great sages for lifetimes they do this and still don't reach Vishnu. Why don't you go back home? And when you're grown up, then you can go. Then you can try. You think, so Krishna has to have determination. Are you sure? So we have to be sure. Because there may be some other thing that, you know, will be placed in front of us, and we'll go for that something else. Prosperity, name and fame, some, you know, like, I've worked hard, now I need a vacation. The material mind that thinks that way. In the material world, people think, I need a vacation, I've worked hard. So, for devotional service, there's not a vacation from devotional service. And when Krishna sees that the desire is very strong, then he reciprocates. Prabhupada describes it. Krishna sees this, and says, all right, I am yours. But then the devotee doesn't think, oh, that's great, now I can, well, be pride. The suffering, your prior question, the suffering is part of education, but there's other things that are part of education also. Like prospering and how to address ourselves properly to that. That doesn't look like suffering, but it's another test. How are we going to use some facility in Krishna's sense facility? Or some recognition, or some well-being, or something. How are we going to use it? That's a test. Good question. Yeah.
You're speaking about one thing or another is offense, goes, chanting,
there's the third. The third category is anarthas, is aparad. The categories of anarthas are analyzed according to their source. So there are anarthas in the heart that arise from offense. That's aparad. There's same aparad, and there's nam aparad. So yes, there's offenses that arise from chanting that's done incorrectly.
Let's see. Someone started chanting Hare Krishna.
Okay.
But their mind is all over the place. Does that mean that person has become purified and at the same time not receive the full benefit of chanting Hare Krishna?
Your voice went off at the end. Does that mean that their person becomes purified?
And still not receive the full benefit.
Yes. Exactly. That's what it means. What to do? bring the mind under control and direct the mind to Krishna so you get the full benefit. Arjuna said to Krishna, oh, impossible. And Krishna said, no, it's possible. It's difficult, but it's possible. And what's the method that Krishna gave? Two things. Constant practice and detachment. to do anything constantly. That's a big price. But constant practice. And detachment. And detachment means progressively becoming attached to Krishna. As you become progressively, that's gradual. You become progressively attached to Krishna, then this detachment from other things will follow. And that's the fruit of hearing. From hearing, attachment to Krishna. Bhakti, parishamu, bhava, viraktir, anyatrakcha. These are the fruits of hearing, properly hearing, practice, and detachment. Then you get the full benefit. Do you want that full benefit? Then practice and detachment. And you'll experience the quality is improving. But still the mind. Mind, dear mind. Raghunath Das Goswami wrote a book, Manashiksha, Instructions to the Mind. My dear mind. Please. Go to Krishna. So we act on the platform of the soul, which is taking help of the intelligence to instruct the mind and put things in the proper order instead of the other way around. Mind's used to being in charge. And we're telling the mind to sit down. You're not in charge. The mind rebels. What do you mean I'm not in charge? I've always been in charge. Who are you to tell me I'm not in charge? I'll show you. It goes on. So one has to tame and curb and control the mind. Any yoga practice, including bhakti yoga, involves that. And our system is devotional system. We do that by serving Krishna with our senses and mind and find happiness, a greater happiness than the other one. So-called happiness, is the mind is in charge. And that's how we bring the mind under control. Purify it. By attraction to Krishna. It's a nice practice. It works, doesn't it? We have to be very clear about the purpose, very determined in the purpose. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.